Hello, all the wiser listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of A Little Wiser. I'm here with my producer, partner in crime, Erica Gerard. Hello, Erica.
Hi, Kimmy.
I'm using like a radio voice.
Do it. I love it. Radio.
Oh, it did take me a while to get comfortable on a microphone, but you coached me through it.
It takes a minute.
We are here with you, as always, to break down, talk about, think about, reflect on last week's episode of All the Wiser. It was my interview with Mark Lukash. He is a husband, father, teacher, writer, and author of My Lovely Wife in the Psych Ward, about his love story with his wife, Julia, through many, at this point, psychotic breaks and hospitalizations. Fascinating story on so many levels. But Erica, why don't you start? What were your standout moments and working on the episode and scripting? What touched you or stayed with you?
Well, yeah. What a beautiful, beautifully told story. It's a beautiful story, and the way that he tells it is just so good. I'm going to struggle to even articulate this. This episode just felt like an 80s monster ballad, you know, like just rocks you to the core in the best way possible.
Wait, what is an 80s monster ballad? Give an example of a song that's an 80s monster.
Oh my gosh.
Know what we're talking about here.
Really? Like, Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Oh, okay.
Little Guns N' Roses, like those like big emotional, Blaze of Glory, John Bon Jovi, those types of.
So that's what it felt like to you, really big, lots of waves and emotions.
Yes.
That makes sense. It's an incredible story, and you're right. He's a wonderful at telling it with such detail and color and heart. I mean, there's so many different things, I think, to unpack here. One is just the notion of choosing to stay over and over again and through really difficult times. And I think, you know, relating to having a partner who has that severity, right, on the spectrum of mental illness and is in and out of psychosis and hospitals is one thing, but how universal this decision of choosing to stay over and over again, like what is a long-term relationship or a marriage, but making the choice again and again and again. And to me, that's kind of how he tells the story, right, is all of the beauty in between, but then the moment where, again, he chooses Julia. He chooses to stay in spite of this. I just can't even imagine. And then for her, I even thought about doing the interview. Like, I was so curious how she feels about or experiences when he's out talking about her. I was like, will she listen to this? Because it's, and I think he does a good job of bringing, you know, her story and her voice into it, but in any relationship, and it's his experience. So I thought about her a lot.
I bet you did. I thought about her too, and wondering how I would feel if my husband was out there telling my story and all the worst times of my life to the world. I'm sure at this point, with the publishing of the book, she's gotten used to the idea of him sharing their story, and it really is their story, I think, as a couple.
Yes, and in the research I did, they tell it together. They've told
it
on stages. So I think she was very much a part of it, and what the story was really, a lot a reflection of the book. So I think I certainly get the sense that she is supportive and on board. But even that, trusting your partner, your spouse, your parent to go out and tell your story is pretty incredible within itself.
Yeah, I'm just staring at the script because I pulled it up. Mm-hmm. When I say script, I just mean the transcript of the episode. And I always go through our scripts and I work on the story and I write the narration and I kind of mold and shape the story. And then I highlight things that stand out to me, quotes and or pieces of audio that I think are interesting. And I'm staring at this one highlight I have in front of me. And it says, Mark says, "What's weird is you grieve this person as if they're gone because they're not the same in any way, but they're still very much alive. And what you don't know is this going to get better."
Yeah. The uncertainty of if she will return back to that version that is mentally and emotionally stable and well.
Yes. And I think we all go through something similar if we're in a relationship or a long-term relationship through the highs and lows, through the ups and downs. Perhaps, you know, before bringing a child into a marriage or a relationship, maybe after grief and loss has affected the relationship, right? Like, we're always changing and evolving and we grow into new versions of ourselves. So this is just a very extreme change that happened all at once. And it made me think about what it must be like for people who are in a relationship with someone with dementia or Alzheimer's who doesn't,
yes,
who doesn't remember who they are, does not remember their partner. And so they're still very much alive, but they're not them, and what that must feel like.
Yeah. It's come up, you know, it's on the show before of grieving the loss of someone who's standing right in front of you and how complex and confusing. To your point, people change over years and decades, and the person you initially fell in love with is, but the rapid pace and the suffering and things like dementia or psychosis is hard to wrap your head around. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And then having to be the one to care for the person and make sure that they're not harming uh-huh. themselves too. You know, that opening clip where he's basically dragging her kicking and screaming into a car to bring her to the emergency room for psychiatric care. I mean, that is super traumatizing, and nobody wants to have to go through that with their partner. Nobody.
Yeah. I also appreciated, and hearing him in other interviews, he's really conscientious about, A, not coming off remotely as rose-colored mm-hmm. glasses, because he says it is a love story, right? I love loving Julia, right, and I choose to stay because of that. But at the same time, not everybody would choose.
That's right.
And that he has no judgment or thought around. This is just his choice and his version. But I wonder, do you think if you were married or in a marriage where it was the same situation that you would stay? I mean, that's such a hard question because it's so nuanced, right? What was happening in your life and who the person was?
I think it's so difficult. It's just such a personal decision.
Okay, sure.
And
yeah.
I just have so much, my heart just goes out to people in those situations because it is so difficult. But what I appreciated about what he said, and I think he's spot on, which is that we seem to be living in a time where we don't stick things out, that we just kind of
yes,
move on.
I love that.
And
yes,
there is so much value in staying the course. And it's mm-hmm. it's a journey, and we can't know what is there for us at the end of it. But we just have to trust and commit that it's going to be for the best, that there's going to be a payoff on the other side. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be in his case, right? Because this wouldn't be true of everybody. But if there is a foundation of love mm-hmm. and respect in the relationship, and the good outweighs the bad, even as bad as it got, I think I would, if the deep love and respect was there. If you're in a relationship where the foundation of the relationship was there was already a million right. cracks, I think that would yeah. be hard to stay, right? If you weren't in with somebody who deeply loved and supported and respected right. you. Maybe that's part of me just giving permission to people who are like, am I an awful person if I choose to leave? Well, it's so specific to the relationship, right? But I believe if his story made sense to me, and I would certainly, if you're in a deeply loving relationship, right, with a person you, yeah, I think I would, but he does have these stretches of time in between that gives him reprieve and room to breathe, and just like the allocation of time and space for a lot of that good and connection to happen. But it's freaking hard. And I can't imagine how hard it would be if you already were in a marriage where you felt unseen, unheard, unloved. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I mean, that would create all kinds of resentment, I think.
Yeah.
Because I didn't – there. It doesn't seem like there was a resentful bone in his body throughout this process. I think he just – had genuine concern for her. He's not a saint. I can tell it was traumatic and exhausting, and he had to give up a lot. He made a lot of sacrifice for her. But one thing that stuck out to me, and I'm curious to know what you think of this specifically, is I said to my husband, well, they've known each other forever. They got together when they were so young that they don't even know life really without the other person. They kind of became adults together. Yeah. But for those who maybe met their partner later in life, would that change things? What do you think?
Yeah, I think is... the more you build a life and shared experiences and a family and, yeah, I think it probably would have been different. I don't know. I mean, you know, hard to say. Yeah, I don't know. But I think that the shared history and when they met for sure plays a part in it.
Yeah, I think so too. Which is not to say that if you meet your partner later in life, you're any less deserving of a fully committed partner who's going to stick with yeah. you through thick and thin. But as somebody who's been with their husband for a very, very long time, did you...
10 million years?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm curious to know what that's been like for you to go through these highs and lows and... stay committed.
Yeah, obviously, like every illness, there's a spectrum. So are you talking specifically to my mental health or just in general, like the ebbs and flows of marriage and life, or
however you want to share?
Yeah, so I mean, we haven't had, obviously, or maybe not obviously, but we have not had any of these sort of extreme things to deal with, right? Bipolar has a spectrum, and I have a much more, significantly more mild, manageable mm-hmm. version, if you're looking at the spectrum for sure. So 100% he has gone through periods where I'm depressed or I'm a little manic and going a million miles an hour. And I think that's part of me, right? That's part of our relationship, and he has his own ebbs and flows, and I think in any marriage there's periods where it's harder and you feel disconnected and more alone, and then you come back together and there's shared experiences, and So, yeah. And the amount that you change. We met when I was 19 and I'm 47. So certainly the person he fell in love with still exists, but the amount of change and things we've been through in that time are a lot of different life stages and phases. And so we've seen a lot of change in our marriage. And I think he's had to weather the mental health struggles and realities. And he's been amazing. He's been supportive. And I mean, I'm sure obviously you can do an interview with him and ask his perspective, because he's in general a little bit of a optimistic, like conflict averse person. So I don't know, maybe he would be like, have a different version. But looking back,
did he know about your diagnosis before you got married?
Yeah. It's in the episode with Holly when I tell him.
Oh, right. Yes, of course.
His response is, yes, my last girl.
Yeah, say it again.
No. So I told him, yes. I told him on a river bend in Montana, which sounds very romantic to tell your boyfriend that you have bipolar disorder. Back in the day when people probably literally thought you were going to be institutionalized for the rest of your life. And he's like, really? And he's like, my last girlfriend was way more crazy. Some version of that, as any, 20-year-old would say. So I've had a much easier road than Julia, right? Yes, we share some language and diagnostics, but I think what they've dealt with is a lot. But it also doesn't have to be mental health. The things that couples go through with losing their parents, the loss of a child, a sick child, there's a myriad of ways, right, in which we go through crises, big and small, as couples, and choose to stay over and over again, right?
Yeah.
And I don't mean to make mine sound like so easy or that my marriage is so easy, but I also don't want to inflate it, because I think I have been blessed with a marriage that has a really strong foundation.
Yes, and I think they did as well. He clearly wasn't expecting to end up being in the role of a caregiver for such an extended amount of time at such a young age. And that was a decade of his life, was really being a caregiver. That's intense. Life ebbs and flows. And in a marriage, you go through good and bad. And you hope that the other person sees what you've sacrificed and sees the effect has been and the impact has been on the support person. I think it was just beautiful to hear him transition out of caregiving and back into, okay, this role is not so central to me anymore. I can now go back to joining a men's soccer league again, which I haven't done. And I can go see friends for dinner again, which I hadn't done in 10 years. And I can go on date nights with my wife, which we hadn't done in a really long time. And that is what I think it means to navigate mental illness as a working parent couple, and knowing that it's a long game, that you're playing a long game.
Well, it's so complex with mental illness, too, because of the way we think of it and because it's behavioral, right? It's very hard to tease out and untangle what is a person's character, who they are at the core of their soul, and versus an illness. And if it was a physical illness and she was going through cancer and remission and another, he would also move into caregiving and could be in and out of hospital and working and taking care of the kids. In this case, so there's a complexity to it because of the behavioral piece. And I think it's really complicated on both ends.
Yeah. It is complicated. Yeah. And that's why it was just so moving to hear him say, knowing that Julia has bipolar and that it's bumpy and hard, I choose that over no Julia every day forever.
Yeah, which is like how beautiful.
I know. It's like the most romantic thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I feel like Ryan Gosling needs to say that in a movie.
It's The Notebook.
It is.
80s, what did you call it?
Monster Ballad. 80s. Yeah. I'm reading what he said about, he even said, I hate to sound moralizing about the society we live in, but I do feel that a lot of what we do enables shallow relationships rather than deep ones, and it allows easy outs rather than hard commitments. And there's a lot more learning you get from sticking through your commitments to people. He said, love is suffering, and I'm not afraid of that. I don't withhold love because I'm afraid that I might get hurt. And God, is that not...
This is The Notebook. This is the... We're going to mark. It's so beautiful.
It is so beautiful. And it's such a human thing to be afraid of suffering. We see suffering and we turn away oftentimes because we don't want to acknowledge that could happen, but he just turned toward it over and over again.
Yeah. I thought about the boys too, what he's modeling as far as love and commitment, and as hard as it is, I would imagine that they're standing witness to that, is they're seeing it, right?
Yeah. I'm sure that they will grow up to be highly compassionate, empathetic beings.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what should we do for sign off, Erica? I'm not going to include that. This is a brainstorm.
Oh, you're not? You're not going to include us trying to figure out how we want to end this? Well, I think if you're someone who struggles with mental illness or even just keeping your head above water, I think it's easy to say that your struggles will be a barrier to someone loving you. That how could anyone love a person who is XYZ, who's sad or who's anxious or who's depressed or who has bipolar? And that is just not true. And it's not just Mark. Mark is extraordinary, but if you are someone who lives with mental illness on a daily basis, and it is tough, however, don't make the mistake of thinking that you're unlovable because of your struggle, because we all have our own demons that we face, and someone is going to love you for the extraordinary person that you are, regardless of what your challenges are. I think that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. And I could not agree more. And there's goodness to be had in even in the suffering, yeah, right? The love and the commitment that he has shown, and the empathy, the compassion, yes, well put, Erica. It couldn't be more true. And for anyone who tells themselves that story in their head, that's all it is a story you're telling yourself in your head. The truth is that, yeah, you are absolutely lovable, and there are people out there to love you deeply.
And even if it's not romantic love, you can look around and see the love. Truly, all it takes is the love of one close, good friend sometimes to remind you that you are worth it, that you are needed and loved.
I think and we get so caught up in that piece of ourselves or over-identifying with that we forget that all humans are complex, right? We all have parts of ourselves that are going to be difficult for other people to be in relationship. But all of the other aspects of ourselves are just as real and just as powerful. So it's, I think, at least in my experience, I over-identified with the pieces that I felt were broken and that I didn't think other people would accept, and under-identified with all the other aspects of myself.
Yes.
And
I'm so glad you said that. It's so true. It's so easy to tip the scales in that direction. And thank you for that reminder that, yeah, we need to be our own hype person as well.
And not always lead with that story.
Yes.
You know, internally or externally.
Exactly.
Frankly.
Yeah.
All right. I love you.
Should we repeat the
only have
the call to action ask for everyone?
Yes. Erica, you do it. You're so wonderful at call to actions.
What? Whatever. So if you've been listening to latest season, you know that it is our last All the Wiser season. And it's been a bit difficult for us to accept, but we're getting there. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. Acceptance. Yep. So we've been asking in the full-length episodes, and I'm going to just ask again here in A Little Wiser. We've been asking you guys if you would do us a very huge favor and make the gesture of reaching out and letting us know what this show has meant to you. If there has been a particular episode, a guest, a conversation that has been meaningful to you, we would love to play your audio on our final episode. So what you can do is you can record a voice memo and you can email it to us at hello@allthewiserpodcast.com, or you can DM us on Instagram at allthewiserpodcast,
or you can call us at 310-243-6364. That's 310-243-6364. Voicemails are still a thing, and this is the place to do it. Leave us one about your favorite episode or guest, or just what the show has meant to you. We have loved hearing them, and we want to string them together in this last month. All right. We love you, All the Wiser peeps. Love you, Erica. And we will be back with you after next.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.